This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Moving on then to our next story. Recently, I think a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the government's new national community policy, and the stated objectives were to create a sense of civic consciousness in our communities, particularly, since we've been talking about it, in PPRs.
And in relation to that, Datuk Seri Dr. Wan Aziza, the Minister of Women, Family and Community Development, announced that her ministry is working on and studying several proposals to make urban centres more livable and holistic.
Her ministry is going to be working along with the UNDP, the United Nations Development Programme, and they're in the midst of planning an age-friendly city. And then separately with UNICEF, they're looking into a proposal to realise the concept of a child-friendly city in Malaysia.
On top of that, she made a note during her speech at the Malaysia Urban Forum 2019 that her ministry is currently drawing up a national accessibility action plan, specifically focused on the community of people with disabilities. She said in reference to age-friendly cities that this concept envisions a town or community where the voice, needs, interests and rights of a child will be of the utmost priority in developing policies and programs at the local government level.
So, yeah, I mean, we're talking about people on, different ends of the age spectrum, right? A child-friendly city compared to an age-friendly city. But I think in both cases, the aim is ultimately the same, because if you are able to create a space that is safe and welcoming for people who are vulnerable within our society, for people who need perhaps a little more extra thought and care when it comes to urban design, then you're talking about ultimately making a more livable city. I think it's one of those conversations where, yes, we're using... we're talking about children and we're talking about people who, the elderly, basically, but ultimately we all benefit.
Yeah, I think so. And the plans, there are three different plans at the moment to target specific groups. But I just wonder if sometimes maybe we have too many. Because, you know, in relation to that, I think the National Community Policy was also released a while ago. So, you know, yes, great ideas, but it to me, it feels like there's an oversaturation of plans. You know, they could have been working off one very, very, very comprehensive plan, and I think the idea would have still succeeded.
It's not clear to me, but what I would like to know is the plan here to convert a city that currently exists into an age-friendly, child-friendly city, or is it to butcher dire the situation, you know, just start from scratch and plan everything right from the beginning and still potentially get it wrong, by the way. But, just is it going to be a fresh thing, right? Begun somewhere else and then it's the if you build it, they will come kind of premise. Or is it going to be looking at somewhere like, for example, PJ, just to pick a spot and say, we're going to start converting this area into what we envision.
Yeah, I think one thing that I would like to see from this plan is hopefully addressing better public transportation, because I don't think I want to be driving when I'm old, you know, because I think I would be a risk to other drivers. And I think that's a conversation that many other countries are having. When do we decide to, you know, prevent old people from driving? Because that's when, you know, yes, it's a bit of a loss of independence, but it's also when we start losing a lot of physical mobility, your eyesight gets worse and so on.
That's just one component of safety, right? I think safety is going to be the main thing. You're talking about people for whom, both children and the elderly, safety is of the utmost concern, especially if you want both groups to have some measure of independence, to have children able to go to the shops
unattended.
To have the elderly walk knowing that there are safety rails for them to grip, for example. So, yeah, curious to see what happens. Curious to see whether if it is in fact going to be a whole separate city that's developed and built and designed, whether any elements of those can be taken to the current mess of our current urban setting, right, which aren't walkable, they're not safe, they're not kid-friendly, certainly, they're not elderly-friendly. So it's a big challenge. And we're going to be talking about how to address that challenge after this with town planner Chow Lun Wai, who's a senior lecturer in urban design at UTM. And we'll be right back. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We are talking about age-inclusive cities. And we have on the line town planner Chow Lun Wai, senior lecturer in urban design at University Technology Malaysia. Lun Wai, thanks for joining us. Let's begin with the basics then. What does it mean to have a city that is age-friendly and disability-friendly?
Well, this is actually a very important aspect of what we call sustainable and livable city, in that good cities should mean that the city environment and urban environment are actually comfortable, safe, and pleasant for people to live in. So in particular, when we look at certain age groups like young children, perhaps, or even the elderly, and as well as groups that are, in a way, handicapped by disability, then if cities or the environments can offer kind of very good environment for these groups of people, it should mean that the city is good for everyone. So which is why I think a city that is age-friendly and disability-friendly would mean that it is a city for everyone. That is what we call generally inclusive city.
How inclusive are our cities at the moment to the elderly, children, as well as to people living with disabilities?
Well, I think our cities have generally improved, I think, a lot over the years, but we still have a lot to do if we are really talking about creating good inclusive cities for all. I think generally in our major cities, with respect to new developments, especially private developments, most of these new developments have probably taken into account the need to provide facilities for universal accessibility. But the general urban environments, I would say, as in the public realm, I think we have much, much more to do still in order to call our cities inclusive. Very good case in point would be what we recently would call the last 6 inches of a journey. We used to talk about the last mile or the first mile, especially with respect to public transport use, for example. But most of the time, we tend to forget completely about the so-called last 6 inches. For example, the installation of very high curbs along the street. So although sometimes we may have disabled-friendly, say, bus stops, for example, but if it is not possible for people to actually get through the last 6 inches of a wheelchair, for example, it may also include maybe young, able-bodied, say, parents with a young child in a pram or in a stroller, or it could mean any so-called able-bodied adults who is carrying some heavy loads or dragging along luggage, for example. So the urban environments that are not even, that are not provided with proper ramp designs, for example, with high curbs all around, level changes that are not smooth, these are all actually barriers for movement. So I think our cities have a lot to do still in order to actually create a more universally accessible environment.
So if it were up to you then, what would be the key changes you would make to our cities to make them more inclusive?
Oh, wow. This is very big, I think. If it is about the physical urban environment, then all these physical changes, like doing our best to get rid of all the unnecessary barriers, especially in the public realm, better connecting places and making urban movement surfaces, especially like pedestrian spaces, urban squares, public places, and so on and so forth, making all this seamlessly connected so that, you know, whenever there is not necessary to have curbs, for example, or drastic change in levels, then this should all be avoided. And when it is unavoidable, then proper considerations need to be put in, as in properly designed ramps that are safe to use and that are actually comfortable to be used. Because, for example, if ramps that are too steep or too long, it could be very, very tiring for a wheelchair user. And environments, for example, which are not well designed even, may mean that people with even minor disability, then their movements could be significantly curtailed. So, I mean, these are probably a few quick examples if we talk about how to physically improve our environments. But at the same time, I think also very important would be social changes. In that, I think the whole society need to have better understanding and appreciation of the meaning of disability. So in a way, it's probably even not appropriate these days to look at people with disability as so-called special groups. Sometimes awareness of our society is so quite low in that we may insensitively, for example, use the word abnormal even, as in referring to people who are able-bodied as normal, and mean that we are, implicitly and perhaps unknowingly, unconsciously referring to people with disability as abnormal. I think that is actually rather bad in a way. These people face disability in particular is because of the barriers we put in our built environment. So it is the built environment in the way we design it now, not properly considering the needs of wheelchair users, for example, or people who are partially blind, or people who cannot hear very clearly, for example. Then the environment becomes a barrier, and therefore the environment disables the people. So the environment actually is the disabling element to the people. So then if the society, I think, has a better understanding of all this, then we should show more respect, mutual respect, and also support of people with disability.
So a while ago, disability rights activist G. Francis Siva said that developers who fail to consider the needs of people living with disabilities should be punished. Does it take regulatory action to ensure that new buildings and spaces will incorporate inclusive design?
Well, if we look at it that way, I think there are many factors that will be at play. One way to think about it would be to think about the whole process of production of our built environment. There are so many key players in it. So on one side, we have, say, professional designers, planners, engineers, who are the, if I may use the word, technical people who are designing and specifying standards for creating the better environments. Then on the other side, we have the government agencies that are actually drawing up guidelines, policies, as well as assessing and evaluating proposals by developers, for example. So that on the other side, again, we have developers who are actually the people probably with the money to carry out developments and so on. Then, of course, the other side, the user themselves, people, that should include everyone. So young children, women, vulnerable groups, people with disability, and simply just anyone. So all of these different parties will have a role to play. But looking at the whole production and delivery of the built environment, then we can probably put a bigger responsibility on the private sector developers who are actually creating developments. Then if, for example, developers and owners of buildings, they are more aware and also appreciative of the needs of all people, then they have the means and resources to actually deliver the better environments. Because on the whole, if we look at it, my personal view would be that theoretically and academically, or even conceptually, we have all the ideas. These are all very well known. In a way, we know how to do or how to deliver better environments. But one of the barriers would be that it is not really implemented or delivered in the real world or in our physical city. So in this sense, developers who are actually owners of projects or building owners and so on, they would actually be playing a very, very important role towards providing the resources and the means for all these ideas of universal accessibility and inclusiveness to really be materialized in our urban environment.
So given that we already obviously have plenty of built environment, lots of buildings and spaces don't necessarily cater to the needs of the elderly, children, or you know, people living with disabilities, would it be very difficult or costly to modify these spaces so that they're more inclusive?
Yeah, with respect to the existing stock of buildings or current built environments, once they are put in place, I think it normally will incur some more costs when we are trying to retrofit them, which is why it's always wiser to actually think about the needs for universal accessibility and for inclusiveness from the beginning. So I think studies have shown that if these have been taken on early in at the early stages of design, the cost, the extra cost that would be incurred would normally be not more than 1.5% of the project cost. But later on, if, for example, the environment has been produced and then it came as an afterthought that we need to redesign and so on, then there'll be definitely a bit of extra cost that need to be borne by building owners or by the developers. And I think this is what is making it difficult, therefore, for environments to be retrofitted. And having said that, I think it's quite also heartening to see that there have been buildings, building owners and developers who have also taken effort to actually improve the environment by retrofitting. But I think the best way is still to think about it from early on.
Lun Wai, thank you so much for sharing your perspective. That was Chow Lun Wai, Senior Lecturer in Urban Design at University Technology Malaysia. And on the subject of trying to create more inclusive cities, not just for age, but really for, you know, everybody who has different needs. Sean says, it's most impossible to use a wheelchair in most of the Klang Valley, stalls, tables, curbs, aircon pipes, etc., etc.
And it's not only about being able to use it. Sometimes when you need one, it's also very hard to get it, or you have to pay a lot more to get it, for example, on some flights.
And it's hard to use it alone. I think those spaces and those roadblocks, really, that Sean is noting, I think trying to navigate that on your own just sounds so incredibly stressful. And to be honest, most of us who are able-bodied, I think, just completely take it for granted. Mm. Yeah, because you don't necessarily notice, you just step over it, right? But somebody in a wheelchair would have a completely different sense of that. Let us know if you've got other suggestions on how to make our cities more inclusive. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at PFM Radio. On the subject of Malaysian politics, Rafik says, my hope for Malaysian politics is our political parties will have a clear ideology of what they want to plan for Malaysia, and then they stay clear of race and religion, while our agong and sultans be given veto power for Bumiputra and Islam, Islamic rights, which would suit their role. Although we don't have yet these kinds of parties that have clear ideologies, except for Parti Socialist Malaysia, I do see Pakatan Harapan as a new liberalist coalition of parties. BN is a state capitalist oriented party, while PAS has a nationalist Islamic core. In this case, I support BN for the coming election because I don't believe in neoliberalism. Think of Norway, Singapore, China, all of them are state capitalist nations and they're successful. But in the end, the balance of all ideologies would be best, and that would mean a combined government is the best option that we have.
Yeah, and moving on to our next message, which comes from Fu, who says that, let's face it, racial politics is definitely not going away. UMNO and PAS will not survive without it. The problem now is that there are many Mr. Know-it-alls who keep on making nonsensical remarks and demands, which eventually become ammunition for UMNO and PAS.
Yes, I do think that, I think that's a very, very astute observation. Now, moving on to, I think, something a little lighter. You may have heard us running a little contest earlier on in the show for Enterprise Rocks. And you know, guys, it's going to be a great event.
Yep, so that's happening on the 14th of March on Thursday at Connection at Nexus Bangsa South. This year's theme is it's the experience to help you weather the retail storm and bring forth the best experience you can give your customer. So to learn more, head to bfm.my/rocks.
And up next after the 7:30 news, it's going to be the next episode of Skip Intro with myself as well as Julian, Ian and Bahe. And we're going to be talking about the recent Oscar-nominated film Can You Ever Forgive Me? So join us for that. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.